Going to go to the Zoom line, audio. Look at that. We got to get all kinds of sponsors here. But how's Elma Cook doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Jason?
Excellent. Thanks for joining the program here. 5,000 candles is the big reason we're going to be talking. But first, hey, we got socked by snow up here. We got like 30 inches in Minot.
Oh, my gosh. It's unbelievable.
Minot, as they say in the national media. Williston, I talked to a gentleman that we both know up there for Train ND the other day, and he said 24 inches they got. So you got any snow stories up when you're up in the Bakken? And you're in, of course, Hollywood right now in Los Angeles, so you don't have any snow there, do you?
Oh, I conveniently dipped out right when the snowstorm hit. No, but you know what I keep hearing, Jason, and this is so typical of Williston and the whole state of North Dakota, is people are just hauling their friends out of ditches, helping strangers, bringing people food. Like the stories of camaraderie and neighborliness are just really remarkable. So that's been warming my heart.
How about you? Did you get stuck in any blizzards up there?
I live very much on the careful side.
Okay.
I don't leave my house as much as I can help it, especially when there's any kind of danger. So,
well,
no good stories.
I always feel for those gentlemen up 150 feet up on those rigs, changing apparatuses and fracking equipment and that sort of thing. You know, the drills that they have to change. They're like, you know, changing flags up on flagpoles up there. And I'm going, man.
Oh, my gosh.
75 mile an hour winds, horizontal snow. No, thank you.
No, thank you to me, too.
Yeah.
I'll work from an office any day.
Tip my hard hat to those gentlemen and women.
1,000%. Mm-hmm.
So 5,000 candles, the big release. How did it go? Walk us through it. You know, this had to be a pretty emotional event for you.
Yeah, the release of this song was really, really special. I mean, talk about tipping your hard hat to hardworking men and women of North Dakota. This song was really just meant to be a tribute to these workers out here who don't get much credit, especially in the national media. And frankly, Jason, people are really enjoying it. All I wanted to do is make this town proud. And, you know, it's getting hundreds of shares on Facebook and tons of comments from people I don't know. I'm getting emails from people I've never met saying, I'm a fifth generation oil field worker and this song means so much to me. So honestly, those emails mean more to me than front page of the Sunday paper or the Williston Herald. But I am getting a good deal of press as well that I'm really delighted by.
How about the song itself? Talk about the meaning behind it and, you know, the 5,000 candles, what that means and how that ties in with the mission management and the oil field.
Yeah, I mean, so I always tell people that when I first joined this industry, I didn't know the difference between a drilling rig and a cell phone tower. I was green as can be. And so the first time flying into Williston, North Dakota at night, you know, you see all these flares. You have no context for what they are. You just know, you know, especially if a poet like me, they look pretty. They look kind of magical and enchanting. So I'd started writing that song years ago from that standpoint of just like, I don't know what this is, but it's pretty cool. And then, of course, you know, as you spend more time in the play, you're like, oh wait, nobody likes natural gas flares. This isn't something we want. The oil companies don't like it. You know, the environmentalists don't like it. We would all love to see them completely go away. And, you know, we've been doing a great job of reducing emissions statewide. So I really, particularly in the video, I tried to focus not so much on like celebrating the flares, because who wants to do that, and more on celebrating the people, the faces of these everyday Americans who are powering the entire world's economy. That's where the song came from. I mean, it came very much from my early days in oil and gas, but the video was inspired by my own clients. My own clients are featured in it. Several locals that have helped me out in so many ways are featured in it. So it's a tribute to the humanity, and I'm really trying to communicate the dignity of these people to a national public who may not appreciate them.
Talk to me about the video. You mentioned some of your clients are in there. There's people that live out in the oil field. We're talking real hardworking men and women, community folks out there. So I don't think a lot of people might not realize that. This is actually a very good PR piece, you know, not only for your business, but for the industry and just kind of what life is like out there. Explain that and talk a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah. So when the average American thinks about oil and gas, I think they're imagining some kind of boardroom with a bunch of fat cats that are eating like prosciutto with like a tiny pickle knife or something. Huh. But what they don't realize is like, it's not the BPs and the Shells and the Exxons that are running the sector. It's the small businesses. Some of them have 2 employees. Some of them are 5, 20, 100, like small businesses. And that's really the backbone. You know, the BPs and the Shells, they own these assets. They own the mineral rights and so forth. Not to get too nerdy, but those everyday service providers are the ones who are actually providing the labor, building and maintaining the asset. So that was something that I wanted to highlight in the video. You know, it's we have such a bad reputation nationally. I don't think people realize just how grassroots and local this industry is.
You know, ESG is a hot topic right now, and we can talk about that any direction you want to go, but. One thing I did want to bring up is I do believe this video would be considered something as ESG. It's a different way to communicate, and that is a big part of the ESG is figuring out ways to engage new ways. Patrick Payton from Midland, the mayor of Midland, Texas, who I think you've spoken to or know, he was on the program not even a month ago talking about sex trafficking. He's very big advocate for awareness when it comes to sex trafficking. And he brought up a great point, which is, you know, the warning signs for sex trafficking should be in training now, in oil field training, because it's so prevalent in some of those areas. When I think of your video, when I think of his comments, these are new innovative ways that are really kind of ESG-centric. Have you thought about that, your video being ESG at all?
Well, it's certainly true that the industry needs to focus on messaging, both inside things like the, you know, what Mayor Patrick was mentioning, and outside talking to the world. I haven't maybe found quite the magic wand that I need to leverage that in all the ways I potentially could. But you're certainly right that it's really the time to get creative. That's something that I see you doing right now, Jason, with, not to butter you up, but with your ESG University, all of these these very, very creative branding strategies around plants and sustainability and planting trees, you know, all of that. So I think we're starting to see a shift. If I had to guess, we're seeing a shift in the creativity in the industry, and we're going to start seeing a lot more of these interesting campaigns that aren't just PR stunts. You know, they are creating meaningful change on the ground. But they're also us having a lot of fun. I mean, like here in the oil field, we're known for a good chili cook-off now and then. I feel like that's, you know, why not have some fun while you're doing good in the world?
Couldn't agree more. Safety innovation was another thing I wanted to talk to you about. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about your oil field business, your boutique, if you will, your Cook Compliance Solutions. How's that going? What's the latest on any sort of compliance issues, if you want to plug that? But just take an opportunity to talk about your oil and gas work, if you wouldn't mind.
Absolutely. So I'd mentioned earlier that, you know, our oil and gas economy is built on the backs of these small businesses that are all working for these larger companies that own the assets. And like the BPs and the Shells, they're kind of like the hot girl that everyone wants to please. That's how I think of it. And the small service providers will do just about anything to get on the good side of this hot girl. And so that, you know, they're asked to have this amount of insurance, this kind of safety training, this acknowledgement form, like the list is endless. So it's a paperwork nightmare. And a lot of these service providers, they grew up on a farm. They might've, you know, just been in the trades their whole life. It's not that they're not bright enough to handle that paperwork, but they just have no interest in doing it. So what my company does, is we translate that confusing world of compliance and administration for these service providers. We take care of like the online compliance accounts managements that they're required to have. And we even negotiate sometimes. I mean, last week I saved a client of mine $10,000 in workers' comp premiums because an operator was asking something of them that they had no reason, no reasonable case for. So it's really fun. It's a lot of problem solving. And honestly, Jason, I'm really seeing the business pick up right now. Now that the oil field is coming back, we're getting almost more referrals than we can keep up with. So in a, in a moment here, we might have to close our client list and say we're not open for new business yet, but like, you know, join the waiting list. But certainly people can learn more at cookcompliance.co. We're really proud of the work that we're doing in the compliance space.
Is there a big issue right now, number one issue? I know at ESG University, we kind of said, you know, oil field executive leadership is number one, and that's by most of the surveys out there. And then number two, which would be number one for the industry, emission management. That's going to be number one, according to the SEC, next, you know, under scope. So are you hearing anything, you know, kind of with your ear to the ground?
You know what, I'm seeing a lot of changes in that area, Jason. Just as you say, emissions management is coming on the radar of these operators. And whatever the operators are thinking, whatever that hot girl I mentioned is thinking, she's going to pass that requirement on to the little guys. And so I candidly don't know how this is going to shake out. I mean, every day I see a new questionnaire pop up in my client's account saying, oh, you know, what were your emissions for Q1 of 2018? I'm like, wait, we weren't tracking emissions in Q1. You know what I mean? There's all sorts of checklists that are emerging and fill in the blank questions. And the service providers right now, as it stands, are not super well equipped to answer those questions because they haven't been measuring. They haven't been, you know, keeping their finger on the pulse of these metrics. So I'm trying to actually convince my fiance to start a company that'll help actually catalog and track emissions for small businesses who can't afford to have a giant consulting company come in and do their metrics. But, you know, even if he doesn't, I have faith that somebody like you is going to step in and help the little guy out in this area. I might end up kind of dabbling in that as well. But right now it's the Wild West. I mean, the requirements are being handed down and it's unclear how the service providers are going to be able to meet them.
Wild West is a great way to put it, because that's actually what I think is what's happening in the carbon industry right now. And really that's what we're talking about, is a carbon industry, whether it's carbon capture, carbon tracking, carbon emissions. I mean, it all seems to be focused around that little molecule. You know, that's just kind of where we're at. I did want to get back to the music, because I'm looking at the clock and looking at the time and everything. And
of course.
Yeah. So walk us through what's next for you. What's going on with your music career? Are you going to do any sort of singing? Are you going to, you know, just take a break now that you've done the music video? What's next?
Well, the reason I'm in Hollywood right now is I'm finishing up a full-length album, and 5,000 Candles is one of the songs on that record. So as soon as that mixing is done, I'm old enough to know you shouldn't set release dates for things that aren't completely done already. Mm-hmm. so I can't give people an ETA on that. But they can certainly follow me on Facebook at Alma Cook, or, you know, email me at hello@cookcompliance.co if you have more questions about where that's going and you want to stay in the loop. I'm really, really delighted by this album. It's some of my best work, and I'm excited to put it out there.
You had a chance to listen to the Matthew Nelson interview that I sent you, available at thecrudelife.com, where we talked about it was a more of a reminder when it comes to deaths and social media, you know, just kind of a 30 to 40 year history of the media saying, okay, when famous people pass away, do you go through proper channels or respectful channels? Because there's kids that are finding out on the news, and now they're finding out on Facebook and Twitter and that kind of stuff. So, you know, you could talk about that if you want to, but I wanted to ask you about the other part we talked about, which was how a musician has had to adapt, because I think that is really important for the oil industry to understand right now more than anything, because when social media came and the internet came, that changed the whole music profession. You had to figure out new creative ways. And the thing that I wanted to get your opinion on is what Matthew Nelson said, which is a hit song now has become a commercial for the singer's brand. And he said for the event, but what it's evolved to is the brand, because the hit song can then become t-shirts or a concert or whatever it might be. Have you walked down that path in terms of from a business side of, you know, what Matthew was talking about?
Well, I'm certainly not the poster child for
you're new to
keeping
this.
Up with the latest trend. Yeah. What'd you say, Jason?
Well, you're new to this, right? I mean, you know,
I mean, yeah, I really struggle with social media and some of these new channels that are unfolding. I think in part because of the stuff you mentioned at the beginning. I mean, social media has a toxic side. It does have the potential to really bring out the worst in people when you're dealing with this whole faceless, anonymous group of people in front of you. You know, there's a lot of mean YouTube comments. There's a lot of really like aggressive cyberbullying, things like that. And while I haven't really found my footing in social media as a musician, I have all that I need. I am content. You know, there's a democratizing of music distribution, certainly, that I've really enjoyed. I mean, any artist can put their music on Spotify and Apple Music now, and I love that. It's certainly opened up a lot of avenues for artists like me who maybe don't want to be spending 24 hours a day on music. Maybe they want to have a business on the side also that they care about and enjoy. So it's certainly enabled a really interesting lifestyle and balance that I would never have been able to live 20 years ago. But I'm definitely not the one who's always on Facebook. I don't even have an Instagram myself right now. I needed to take a break. So setting personal boundaries, I mean, talk about ESG. That's really been important for me.
Well, I do go on a social media detox every summer. I've been doing it since 2016.
And fabulous.
Yeah, when I first started, it was when I was going through my separation and my custody battle. And I did it more to just not post anything stupid at 2 in the... I didn't want to trump anything, right? Just wake up in the middle of the night and just post something dumb that I'm going to regret the next day.
Yes.
And that's not a slam on Trump. I actually think that's now a term in the dictionary that we've now adopted as a society. But no, and what I found was I really enjoyed talking to people. I really enjoyed thinking for myself. And what I was more amazed about was how the news was just gone. And so I just had this more of a positive view on life. And so every summer, I start every summer. And it's so funny because it's supposed to start in June. Well, it's started in May now. It just creeps closer and closer to like, oh, it's Easter. Let's go on a social media detox. And last year, I went 3 months.
Yes.
I went 3 months. Now, I don't do it for my business. I cannot do it for my business yet.
I was going to say, yeah, I can't even imagine you being absent on LinkedIn for 3 months.
But,
what would the world even do?
But if you looked at my LinkedIn stuff, it's all business stuff. It's all business.
Oh, it's you have the best, most interesting social media presence of anyone in the pocket. I think you should do social media consulting for oilfield companies. I'm not kidding, Jason.
Well, I appreciate that. And what we do... Jim Willis of the Marcellus Drilling News. So, and James Latshaw. James is the former publisher for the Texas Oilfield Magazine, and they're now defunct. But they were around for like 20 years. And he calls me up one day, and he goes, Jason, I've been looking at Omaha World Herald. I've been looking at the Kansas City Star. I've been looking at the Austin this. So he was checking all these news sites, right? And he was following all their links and their likes and their shares. And unless something was like polarizing, even the big dogs only got a couple likes.
Yeah.
And because people just don't engage with that kind of news. They read it, but they don't necessarily engage with it in a social media atmosphere, right? So I brought that up to Jim Willis, who's the publisher and the owner of the Marcellus Drilling News. And he goes, oh, yeah, I figured that out a long time. He goes, I'm just a shouter on social media. And I went, that's how I'm going to live my life. Okay, in my business world, I'm just a shouter on social media. If I engage, that means I got a little extra time or I'm going to the bathroom.
Yeah, I mean, political polarization, ideological polarization is such a problem right now. And if I may, I also work with a nonprofit called Braver Angels. You can learn more about it at braverangels.org. And they do kind of like a marriage counseling for America. It was founded by a marriage and family therapist who saw a big problem going on, you know, stimulated by social media, stimulated by these news organizations that are trying to make a buck. And they said, how can we solve this? So they have workshops. They actually have really similar civilized debates. We have a music team. I'm the chair of the music team, so I head up a lot of our initiatives there. And it's just a really marvelous way to bring people together in a time when social media is encouraging you to bite the head off of your neighbor.
Well, we have to remember, though, and this is, and we are working on a column right now for ESG University on social media. And one of the issues with social media that business owners are finding out is the word social. It's founded on being social. So if you're being social when you're working, you're either being unproductive or you're spending money. So it's bankrupting people fast. It's spending budgets faster than people expected. Trade shows aren't as cheap as what they thought as soon as you start adding the inflation and some other things in. So The whole social media part, it's funny you mentioned you're not on Instagram. I'm not either. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter and LinkedIn, and that's it, because we haven't had the resources to develop the new strategy that's needed to go to those social medias. Because I look at each social media as you have to approach it differently. You can't put the same thing on LinkedIn that you do on Facebook.
That's 1,000%.
Yeah, and maybe you can on Facebook and Instagram, but what's the point then? So TikTok, I look at completely separate. TikTok to me is like, I got to have a little mini production studio to do this, right? I just can't go and start wiggling my hips and putting it to background music. I'm an old dude. I mean, are you kidding me?
You can. It might go viral. Who knows?
Yeah, for the cops. They'll call the cops. You kidding me? So, creepy old guy is wiggling his hips again to Old Hippie. The Old Hippie by the Bellamy Brothers.
I love it.
But you see my point is there's, you know, you, I think honestly, you got to approach each social media differently. And
if you can't manage one, if you can't keep up with it, then don't have it. That's my philosophy. It's like, why am I going to pretend that I'm a visual artist? Like, I'm not a photographer. Why would I be on Instagram? That kind of thing. I mean, I know it's not sage advice conventionally in the music industry, but it is sage advice for my sanity.
No, it's true, though. It's totally true. And one of the ways that this good friend of mine, who's just a stellar ad agency mind, and he's an ad agency is him now, and he's down to like two global clients because he's so talented. He and I were talking about this 10 years ago, where the content world has changed in the world of marketing, to where ad agencies, you are now competing with musicians, okay? So the musicians now can be an ad agency because they're that talented. Like in things like, do you understand what I mean by that? It's not a knock on musicians or ad agencies. It's no different than as a podcaster. I'm now competing with Ron Burgundy, who's not even a real person.
Yeah, it's back to that Wild West thing.
Exactly.
We're still trying to figure out how we can survive out here.
Totally. But I see the clock coming to an end here. So what should we talk about in the last 2 minutes? What do you want? What should we? Do you want to plug something? Do you want to, you know, wrap up the social media talk? Do you want to, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Jason, honestly, if there's one takeaway I want people to leave with, it's go watch the 5,000 Candles music video.
You can
find it on YouTube. 5,000 Candles, Alma Cook is the name. And see if there's anybody you recognize in it. You know, if you're in the Williston Basin, you might have a buddy who's in the video. But I really want to pay tribute to you guys. You all mean so much to me. And it just would mean the world if people would watch and share that video.
And I do want to mention, too, for the individuals on the radio side of things that are listening to this across our 5-state radio network, that is Alma Cook's music you're hearing in the background. So the 3 to 5 or 4 different songs that we cycle in and out of there is Alma Cook. That is her original songs. And in closing, I guess, talk about some of your other music, because, you know, you've got Surefire, you've got So Close, you've written that one Bobby that's now available. Talk about some of just your music itself.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working on this full length album that's coming out for far too long. But in the meantime, I've been releasing a lot of singles. You mentioned Bobby and So Close. Those are kind of in an R&B style. Surefire is a little more pop. So I dabble in a lot of different genres and I have fun. I try to write lyrics that are really clever and things that you would actually say and not just these cheesy one-liners that you might see on like a Disney show or something. So I try to give the people something real. But at the end of the day, I mean, most artists will tell you they don't even feel like they're the ones writing their own songs. The songs kind of write themselves and there's only so much you can do to taper it around the edges. There's quite a variety of work. I would say that there's something for everybody if you look at my catalog on Spotify or iTunes.